Here come the fat expats. We're really good drink drinkers. Here come the fat expats. We hope you really like us.
Okay, Sez, episode 24. How are you?
I'm good. Hello, everyone. How is it in Adelaide?
Well, it's still cool, yes. But the good news is the air conditioner man has been today and he has fixed the heater.
Fantastic.
Sort of $3,000 later.
Oh, not so fantastic.
Yeah, that was a good phone call, that one. Particularly when my eldest took the call and thought that the man had said $12,000. So there was a slight panic there. I nearly drove back to the shop that I'd made all the purchases at the day before to return everything.
But now you've got heating.
Yes, we have heating. So how was your weekend?
It was good. It's actually busy. It's still Ramadan, but there's still, like, most of my friends are still here. So I'm actually having a really good time, and I'm off to the W Hotel this morning for some morning tea because all the hotels still have their restaurants open. So it's actually not too bad. And you know what? The shops are open in the morning too. So it's almost business as usual. It's not too bad at all.
So, Sez, this week we're talking about the long-distance expat relationship. We've called it Surviving the Distance.
Yes. And there's a few different scenarios with this, isn't there?
There are. So there's, you know, obviously the people who, you know, live in different countries, and, you know, there might be ones in, like, today we're going to talk to someone where she lives in Edinburgh and her husband commutes to London and comes home on weekends. But there's also the long distance that I'm partaking in at the moment, where my husband's in Qatar, but I'm here with the kids. He's definitely going through a bromance with his buddies, so I keep getting little messages and selfies of him by the pool with his mates.
Matt calls them his man wives. When to go away, Matt calls them he's hanging out with his man wives.
Well, the one I liked was a girlfriend sent me a message yesterday with a couple of photos attached of her husband and my husband together by the pool, and then there was another one of them together checking out the cannons, and then another one, and I should let people know the cannons is at, well, the beginning of iftar, and so they've gone
which
down
means you can eat.
Yes, so they'd gone down to celebrate that together and taken a selfie. But another girlfriend had said she had Skyped with her husband while my husband and a couple of other guys were around. And one of the guys was heading back to the States tomorrow to see his wife, but he'd been in the swimming pool and the Labrador had jumped in and kind of scratched his back. You know how dogs kind of get in the water and head straight for you?
Yeah.
So she was wondering how he was going to explain the scratches on his back to his wife.
That is hilarious.
So there's a few different types of distance, is there? And, of course, lots of people do it in their home country as well.
Yeah.
People heading
my parents do it. When I was thinking about this episode, my parents do it. My, as I've said before, mum and dad live an hour and a half outside of Sydney, but dad still has his business. So he's in Sydney during the week and then comes down for a long weekend. So after sort of over 30 years of marriage, being with each other every day, for the last couple of years, they've been doing the long distance thing.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So do your parents have a house in Sydney that he goes to and he goes...
He has a house in Sydney. They have a house in Sydney. And then he's there from, I think it's Monday to Thursday, and then he comes down I think Wednesday evening, actually, and then does the long weekend down with mum.
Wow.
So I think that took a while for them to get used to, especially for my dad, I think, because we always laugh that my dad's a bit addicted to my mum. So I don't know how, but he's also a bit of a workaholic. He's not ready to retire yet. He's 74 and still going strong. So so that's something they had to get used to. I didn't even think about that, actually, until we got ready to record today.
And could you do it, Sez? Could you do it with Matt?
Do you know, again, I was so naive when we moved overseas. I didn't even think about that I would come home by myself, because it just wasn't a reality to us when we were living in Australia. It just wasn't something that was part of our life. And when we moved to Abu Dhabi, I met a couple of women that just hated living in the Middle East, that they sort of only lasted a month there. They didn't like it. They didn't want to be there. So they went back to their home countries and their husbands stayed. And I just found that quite strange and bizarre, because I'd live anywhere with Matt. And I was adamant when we moved over there and I found out that, you know, partners would take the children back home for the summer holidays, that there was no way I was ever going to do that. We were never going to be separated. We would take our holidays together. And we did that for the first couple of years. And then we moved to Doha and I realized I did need to get out. I needed that break. So I think it was in our third year that I took Sadie home on my own. And we've been doing that ever since. And it's hard, but, you know, it works. I can't do any more than sort of 4 or 5 weeks away. The first time I did it, I went for 2 months and that was too long, too far apart from one another. So we try and do sort of 4 or 5 weeks now. So his best friend. I like hanging out with him. I miss him.
And it's all that stuff about the family too, you know, the whole family life gets disrupted. Do you know,
and as Sadie gets older, she actually misses, I think when she was little, I really don't think she kind of knew that we weren't together. Do you know what I mean? She was just having so much fun. Now she gets a bit older and she's quite the daddy girl. It's really hard on her these days. So, we don't like do it for long periods of time.
I agree with you. And I think probably when the children were really little and there was nothing about school or any of those factors, I definitely never wanted to leave Greg. Do you know, I couldn't even bear a couple of nights. And I guess because he travelled a lot for work too, the idea of then making that break even bigger of being away from him when I didn't, you know, when he wasn't travelling, that just didn't appeal to me at all. But I think once, really for us, it was once our eldest was about sort of 9 or 10 that I wanted to get into more of a routine of coming back to Australia. And and that just kind of meant that we had to spend some time apart. But I guess what they miss out on with Greg, what I've really realised this trip, is they gain from all the other things that they get to do with family. I'm in Adelaide this at the moment because this weekend the girls went to the 5 Seconds of Summer concert. Oh yes, it was very exciting, Sarah. Oh my gosh.
Their first ever big concert?
Yep, 10,000 people.
Oh my gosh.
95 of percent of them screaming teenage girls. But I mean, that in itself was a big deal because it's the first time they went with two other friends, and so I dropped them off sort of out the front with the designated spot and came back and picked them up at the designated spot. But that was a big deal to see them be in a huge group and have their tickets and find where they were sitting and, you know, get through the 3 hours of concert and then get outside in the masses and then find me. And do you know, things like that don't happen in Doha, you know.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. And you don't get that experience of having to learn those.
Being really independent.
Yeah. It's a life skill. But at the same time, I was able to drive down, take the girls to the concert, you know, pick up another couple of kids and drop them and do whatever, because the two boys are down in Remark with Granny. And they're having a fabulous time with Granny because you can imagine they're allowed to have whatever they like, eat whatever they like, shop for whatever they like.
They're probably having ice cream and tea for breakfast,
Granny told me this morning that, you know, Henry got up, got a blanket, put himself on the couch, turned the aircon on, you know, knew how to, he knows how to run Granny's house completely. They've been to the toy shop, you know, they've been out to dinner.
They're having a time of their lives, aren't they?
Yeah. And they're in no rush for me to get back there. So it's what they're getting here, as much as we all miss G, and he'll be back here next week, it is. But there's other things we gain. But I don't know if I could ever do what a lot of women I've spoken to this week are doing, and that is, you know, on a far more sort of long-term basis.
That's a whole different kettle of fish, really, isn't it?
Yeah, because there's a lot you have to do on your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like it's, I think for some women it's like they're, or men, single parents, but, you know, the other one's off working, and it's like being a single parent. And I think you probably get into your own routine, doing your own style of things, and then you might have to adjust every time they come home. I think it's, you know, I think it takes a really strong couple actually to do that. I don't know if I'm cut out for it actually.
No. All right, well, maybe this is a good time to listen to Evelyn, because she has really lived this kind of life most of her married life, because her husband has always travelled. And I thought she was quite interesting to talk to. So we'll have a listen to Evelyn.
I actually first moved overseas straight out of uni. So I moved to New York for work when I was 22 with my two little suitcases, and thought I was going for 6 months and never went back, and met my husband, who had moved separately from Australia. He's from Melbourne originally. He had moved to the US, and we met in business school, and then he moved to Hong Kong. And I moved there about 15 months later. So we did the long distance thing for a while then, which was really long distance. And then we've been in, Switzerland, Shanghai. We had a couple of years back in the US in Michigan, 5 years in Belgium. And we made the decision last year to repatriate to Edinburgh, partly just because of his job and partly because we needed to make some decisions about schooling. So we are back in Edinburgh, which is my home country, but neither my husband nor the kids have ever lived here. So that's quite interesting. And yeah, he's working in London.
So tell me, how is it now with him commuting? How are you finding the distance between you?
The kids and I are kind of used to him traveling, because he's always had a job that's involved a reasonable amount of travel. And so I think for us, for me, the biggest difference is that everyone's away during the week, more or less. I mean, the kids are at school till late. Even my youngest, he's 12. Next year, he'll be doing the really long hours, same as my daughter. And at the moment, he's in school till 7 o'clock, 2 nights a week, and 5 the rest. So it's kind of, you know, that whole eating dinner myself is kind of odd. But it doesn't, I'm fairly introverted, so it's not that big a deal. And I think the biggest adjustment's actually been for my husband. Because, you know, when you travel for business, you generally have stuff on in the evenings. Whereas if you're commuting to another place, then it's just normal life. So, you know, he doesn't always have the organized activities in the evening. So then, and he is really reluctant to have a whole life that's separate from us in London. But, you know, on the other hand, he kind of has to do some stuff for himself so that he doesn't feel like he's just rattling around in London. Or, you know, the other alternative would be working every night, and that's no fun. So, yeah, we're still finding that balance, I would say. But overall, it's going fine. And, you know, it's about communication and making the most of the time that we do have as a family and as a couple when he's here. So, yeah, and I think the other challenge is when there's other travel on top of being in London, which this month has been hideous. So he's been in Brazil, the US, China, France, God knows where. I mean, it's been one of those months. So I've barely seen him. And so, yeah, that's a little more challenging. But overall, it's going really well. And it was more important to get the kids settled in a school where they could finish out their education and have the stability. And, you know, if we compromise with long-distance commuting for a little while, then that's okay at this point.
Right. So once the children are older, I gather there'd be no need to commute. You would then just join him in London.
You know, one thing we've talked about, even for next year, once the kids are both doing their really long school hours, is that they might board occasionally, and I'll pop down to London for a couple of nights every now and again. So we'll have to see how the logistics of that all go, because we bought ourselves a pet when we moved here, so that complicates things too. She's a cat, so I think I can leave her for a couple of nights.
So, Evelyn, how do you think you'd feel if the children were younger? So if they were, you know, 3, 5 and 7, do you think, and you were having to do, you know, bed, bath, dinner and that routine, do you think it'd still work as well?
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily think that we would have made the decision to repatriate when they were younger. You know, the decision to do what we're doing now is really based on giving the kids educational stability more than anything else. And, you know, you make different choices at different times. I mean, you know, when my kids were younger, my husband traveled a lot anyway, so always did the bed bath routine, dinner bed bath routine anyway, a lot by myself, but probably not as much as I would do it now. So yeah, I just don't think we would have made the decision the way we did if the kids were younger. We, you know, I think we would have felt that we could have taken more risks educationally, and if we had to move partway through a school year, it's probably not the end of the world. Whereas when you've got a child who's going into first year of GCSEs, you can't really afford to be moving halfway through the course, you know.
Do you think then, Evelyn, you've probably, your expat life has meant that you've done a lot more solo parenting than perhaps friends that haven't had an expat life?
Yeah, probably. In fact, almost certainly. I don't know too many people who have spouses who travel as much as mine. Having said that, you know, here in Edinburgh, there are plenty of people whose spouses are commuting up and down to London. So I guess, yeah, here there are a lot of people who are doing quite a lot of solo parenting. But yeah, it seemed like when the kids were younger, I did a lot more solo parenting, and was always kind of surprised when people say, oh, you know, don't know how you do it, looking after the kids so much by yourself. And it's just, you kind of get used to it and take it in your stride, don't you?
How do you think you'd go if you were living together 24/7?
we'd do fine. I'm laughing because there have been a couple of points where he's been between jobs, and then it gets a little interesting because he does stuff. He's not good at sitting still, so his to-do list partly becomes mine. That's a bit challenging, but otherwise, yeah, it's fine. We do a lot of stuff together. We enjoy doing stuff together. Not that we don't argue, because most couples I know do, but we enjoy each other's company, so I think it would be fine. I just haven't really experienced it that much in the entire time we've been married.
So what did you think?
I think that they're both really strong to be able to do that for so many years. Like I said before, I don't know if I'm cut out for that, and I understand why they've done it. They obviously need their children to have more of a routine and finish off their school years. And I think it's really important what you said about communication, that really communication is key.
Yes.
And I think it was really interesting when she said her husband now lives, you know, he's not just travelling to and from different places for work. He lives now in London during the week, so he has to make a life for himself there.
Yes.
That was a big sort of aha. Oh, wow, yes, he does have to make a life for himself.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, that bit really struck me as well, because if you're travelling for business, you're just busy doing meetings and, getting to and from.
Yes,
but if you're doing a definite commute, you do. You have to set up, the weekly, whether it's the tennis match or the sort of community stuff you're going to do to keep you alive, like your social stuff. And, that would be very hard because you would be doing it on your own. I mean, I think I had a chat to a girlfriend of mine who's in the country, and her husband's gone off to work in the mines, and she was saying it has really killed their social life because people just assume that he's going to be away, so they don't get asked. And, a lot of couples,
don't ask her to go on her own?
No, not as much. Oh. And I kind of can see that how that can happen. I don't condone it, and I think it's a pretty shitty thing to do, but I can see how people do that because, they're having a dinner party for eight. Oh, well, she doesn't have her partner. That all makes it a bit tricky, it's
or maybe they think she doesn't want to be surrounded by other married couples, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but she said it really has. She said her social life has kind of reverted back to family and hanging out with her sisters and doing more stuff like that.
And I also think once they come back, you'd want really quality time. So maybe you don't even want to go out with other people when they're back because you just want to be together as a family unit.
Yes.
So why would you want to going out and about with people when you just want to be just the two of you or with your family?
Yeah. Now, I have to say, I forgot to say to you before when Evelyn, when we were listening to Evelyn, her accent, could you believe that accent?
Yes. She has that sort of Kylie Minogue, Elle Macpherson, cosmopolitan, travel the world accent.
Yeah, she's kind of like this transatlantic character.
I love it.
Me too. And I said to her afterwards, I said, every sentence you said, it was like, okay, there's a bit of Scottish. No, there's a bit of Australian. Oh, hang on, that's American. Her accent was amazing. It was fantastic.
And you couldn't really pinpoint where she was from.
Yes, and earlier in the week I had written about being married to a wanker, which is
when I saw that pop up in my face, I was like, oh my God, what's G gone and done? She's putting him a wanker on her blog. But then obviously it wasn't about him being a wanker in the traditional sense of the word.
Yes, so for those who haven't seen it, it was the wives away, no kids, eating rubbish. But Evelyn tells me that people that work in London and live in Edinburgh are called Willies because they work in London, live in Edinburgh.
I like that. That's cute.
Yeah, but I also thought with Evelyn it's almost like because they've been apart so much, they are well practiced in having this sort of leg of the journey of the commute because
they've been doing it for so long. That's their normal.
That's right. And when I had small children and Greg travelled a lot, because I think we worked out he travelled 70% of the time when the guys were babies. And I remember being very resentful of the whole, dinner, bath and bed routine at the end of the day because it was like doing that on your own over and over. And I asked her about that and said, do you get resentful? And she said no, because I've pretty much done a lot of that anyway on my own, our whole relationship. So,
Interesting when he retires or when they're in the same city, what their relationship will become then. because you know they're used to being very independent without one another, having quality time together when, you know, when he's in Edinburgh. It'd be really interesting to see if the dynamic shift once they're together full time.
Yeah. And one of the other things Evelyn had mentioned too was, because I really skirted around asking all three of the women that I interviewed, because I didn't know quite how to ask the question without sounding really rude. And it's a question that I get asked all the time, but by really good friends. But people always ask you about trust and whether you, if you worry about your partner being on their own or traveling or, you know. And so I did ask Evelyn about, you know, trust and everything. And she said, well, I don't think, I thought this was a really interesting point. She said, I don't think people who have issues with trust would ever get themselves in our situation. Do you know, they wouldn't allow themselves to be apart.
That's a really, really good point, isn't it? I think, if you felt like there was any way that either one was going to stray, then you just wouldn't have that type of sup.
Yes. And I've never
And I have that. 1,000% trust in Matt. I know he'd never do anything, but my imagination runs wild. I just don't think I'd be able to cope with it, even though I know deep down he would never do a thing. My imagination goes crazy.
Yeah, me too. Me
too. I'd be a nightmare that just wouldn't work. I know it wouldn't work.
Yeah. I would be particularly bad, and this is a terrible thing to say too, about it depends where they're travelling, because, you know, there are certain parts of the world where you go, because there are certain parts of the world where you go, well, you can't get up to too much trouble there.
Yeah.
But there are other parts, like if he was 1 week on, 1 week off in Bangkok.
Yeah,
that's really struggle.
That's our whole cinnamon donut scenario, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
you're never going to Bangkok. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not happening. There's no way my imagination could cope with any of that. I couldn't do it.
Okay, so I also spoke to Ali, and Ali lives just out of Melbourne and in country Victoria, and her husband works away for most of the week. And I asked her just to explain what her life looks like in Mansfield, Victoria.
Yeah, we've got lots of families. A lot of it is because we are reasonably close to Melbourne, that there will be people who have are still holding their, you know, their big-time job in Melbourne, but they live here for the lifestyle. We're in mountains and lakes and rivers and, you know, countryside and all that kind of stuff. So the family live here, and it's usually dad, but I know there are a few mums, usually dad, that works in Melbourne or is away with the mines. I know a few who go away on the oil rigs, and they're either week on, week off, or they can be 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. There's one family at our school where, from what I understand, dad comes home 3 times a year. Family are here doing their family stuff, and dad sort of is in and out, depending on what his job allows.
Now, in your case, with your partner, he's not off—he's not off in the mines or on the rigs or wherever. So, where is he when he's going? Is he in hotel rooms or is he in another house that you guys have got? How does it? What does his life look like away from you?
So, he's in hotel rooms.
Right.
When he's not with us, so he leaves early Monday morning to be at work at 8 or 8:30, and he comes home on Friday nights. Sometimes we get him home during the week. He might come home on a Wednesday night, but he'll usually arrive home at 7 or 8 at night and have to be out of the house by close to 7 the next morning. So it's a very fleeting visit.
And how do you cope with that, Ali? Like what are some of the difficulties?
Well, my girls are big girls now. They're nearly 11 and 12, so they're fairly self-sufficient, and, you know, one's at high school and one's at senior primary school. So, you know, they're great, they're helpful, but they're also still kids that fight and argue and all of those sorts of things. So, I mean, they're pretty good in realising that they've got to help out and that I get just as tired and grumpy and miss my husband, dad, just as much as they do, but just in a different way. And, you know, so we just do the do. I don't have things on during the week at night, which can sometimes be a little tricky, and I just arrange things when he's around.
Okay, so I imagine you've done a lot of parent-teacher nights on your own.
Oh, yes. Yes, we've had two of those this week.
What do you think is hard for your husband being away? What do you think he sort of struggles with?
Well, one of the things that he's voiced, I know there's a lot of things that he struggles with, but one of the things he's voiced is not being here to see the girls in their school uniforms, for example, going off to school or when they get home. Because, I mean, we talk to him several times a day, but he's not here when they come in after school and can say, oh, and I did this and I played netball and I did this in art or whatever. He's on the other end of a phone. Whereas I get, you know, see them looking beautiful in their school uniforms or catching up with them at sports days or all of those things.
And do you think decisions kind of have to get made without him, or do you just include him? Like, is it, do you communicate that well sort of on the phone and et cetera that not a lot of decisions get made without him, or do things just have to happen?
The little things just have to happen, but bigger things certainly get discussed. So, for example, with the parent-teacher interviews this week, we got the school report on Monday, read it out over the phone, said, OK, I think this, blah, blah, blah. He said, you know, can you bring this up with the teacher? You know, I think this needs to be discussed. So that kind of thing before I went in, and then obviously the debrief after the school interviews.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, this is what we've done and how we've done it and what I said and what she said and that sort of thing. But the, like the little everyday stuff just happens. It's, you know, I'm here and I make that decision.
And Ali, do you ever get resentful? Like that sentence you've just used about, oh, I think this needs to be discussed, that's a familiar sentence to me. And it's one that makes me kind of go, oh, I wish I didn't have to. So do you ever feel resentful that you do always have to have the discussion?
Yes, sometimes, but then there's also that reminder that I'm the one that's here with the kids, so I'm getting to have that he doesn't.
Yes.
And if it wasn't him away working, then it would be me away working. Yes. So, no, yeah, with the situation that we're in and with the job situation where we live and all of that kind of stuff, you know, one of us has to be doing the hard yards and putting in this way, and, you know, at this stage it's him.
And do people ever ask, Ali, do you ever have people around you say, why do you do this? Why can't he just get a less paying job where he's here with you all the time?
Yeah, there are some people that do that, but, I mean, as I said, we've got quite a few people in our community that are in similar situations doing the same sort of stuff. And every day when I look out my window and see the mountains and the beautiful white horizons and all of that kind of stuff, it's a pretty huge reminder of why we live where we do. It's just unfortunate that, you know, I live in a town that has 2,500 people, and that there just aren't the jobs that can do, you know, support everybody in that community.
And do you think it's fair to say because you have these people around you that are all doing similar things and they perhaps don't get to see as much of their partners as you do, that kind of gives you an awareness of how lucky you are?
Yes, certainly. And also in that situation, though, of having a lot of people, whilst they're not exactly the same, people get it. So when you say, oh, I'm solo parenting this week, they just nod and go, oh, well, can we help? Can we do this? Or, yeah, that was me last week. I've got a friend who lives just down the road and her partner is month on month off. So when she's got him home, put up her hand and say, oh, can I do this or do you want to do this together? And then when she's got her partner away for the whole month, then, you know, you sort of say, can I help do pick up or pick something up at the supermarket for you or whatever it might be.
And if you were to meet anyone who was about to embark on doing the same thing, what would your advice be to them? Like, what do you think some of the tips are to kind of keeping your head above water?
Communicate, lots of communication. You have to talk to the other person, and it goes both ways. Whether you're the away person or the home person, you have to keep talking, and you have to, if you are resentful, say, I'm feeling really annoyed because of blah, or I don't, you know, you're talking about this. And sometimes it is hard. It is easy to be resentful because you look at them saying, okay, well, I'm staying in a hotel and I'm eating out and I'm doing this and I went to a movie and I'm thinking, and I'm at home and I'm doing the washing and making dinner and I've got grumpy children. So it's, you know, keeping up communication is a really good thing. And also I think sometimes having a time limit, saying we're only going to do this for X amount of years.
Right. Do you have a time limit?
Yeah, we've got a not a set time limit, but we've said that this can't be forever. Like for it to only be, you know, maximum of another 18 months, and we have plans for after that for a period of time so that it puts us in a better space and we can, you know, pay off bills and pay off mortgages and do those sorts of things so that we can be in a better spot so that it's not forever.
Really interesting.
Yeah, isn't it? And it all comes back to that. It all comes back to that communication.
Yeah, absolutely. Again. And what I think with Ali, it was almost a lifestyle choice. Obviously, where she's living in Victoria is absolutely beautiful. And they've made a lifestyle choice that that's going to be their home base and he's going to travel back and forth. But I liked that she obviously has a community there where there's a few people in the same boat as her, and I think that would make a huge difference
yeah.
if people get it.
Yes,
and
yes.
understand what it's like for her, that you can you have people that you can call for help and that they understand what she's going through. I think it'd be much more difficult if you're in a community where that wasn't the norm.
Which is
quite isolated.
Yeah, which is kind of what we have in our expat community, isn't
That's like what people, I was exactly thinking. It's almost like they're their own little group of expat kind of thing happening there.
Yeah.
People just get it.
And I think, Sarah, because we have a lot of listeners that are people with fly-in, fly-out partners, and we have a lot of listeners who are people who are isolated in rural communities, and I think it's because we have very similar issues in our lives, and that's why is that we can all identify with each other. I know when I went to do Lizzie's, you know, subject choices at school, the woman who did it with us, she was originally a country kid who moved to the city, and she said, oh, I always see real similarities in third culture kids and country kids because they end up growing up in one world, being plucked into another, and they're never really country kids again, and they're never really city kids. They're kind of these different kids that are a bit of both, that, that mush. Yeah. And I said to her, that's exactly how I've always felt. I've always felt that country life gave me my first introduction to expat life, do you know, in that same way.
And I
think that's why. But yeah, having that community there and people, the way she described people saying, oh, okay, well, can I bring a dinner around for you, or can I pick up the kids, or that's fantastic.
And I think also having her children a little bit older, she's done with doing the bath time and all those mundane things, you know, her girls can sort of take care of themselves in that regard. So I think it'd be hard if you had really small children.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
You know, that's
Yeah.
But I think if I was doing that, I don't think my kids would get past every single night.
But it's that
that's such
whole
a mundane job.
Oh, it is for me. That was my, you know, that was my killer part of the day, you know. Do I have to feed you again and then clean the food off you?
You might grow pumpkins underneath your toenails, but do we really have to put you in the bath again? But Ali sounds like a really strong woman, and I feel
she's great.
And it's a decision she's that great. They've made together. It's working for them now. It's not going to be forever. And I think it's just wonderful that she has a community there that's supporting her and she's supporting them. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, I did have a giggle when she was saying about, you know, her and her husband have a lot of conversations about, okay, well, I think this needs to be discussed. And that is the thing that drives me the most nutty. And it's not G's fault at all because there's nothing he can do, right? His mom's away, but he wants to say, you know, well, you know, he still wants to have the same input. Obviously, he deserves to. But when you're running the show on your
own, you're in it.
And you're in it. You know, I could hear him the other day. It was raining outside and the kids were inside and they were on sort of technology and he FaceTimed and I could hear him saying to them, you know, you need to get outside and, you know, kick the footy or do whatever. And I was thinking, you don't know that they've already done that this morning and that they can't do it now, but you're trying to parent from a million miles away. Or it's something about a report card, or it's something about, you know, a health thing. You know, did you ask the ENT whether this and this could happen? And you think, well, I'm trying to do it all. But it all comes back to communication. If you say, we will talk X amount of times per day, or mm-hmm. this is, you know, I'm leaving this bit up to you. You know, you just have to have amazing communication to get through it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think what I would struggle with is that I would do my own thing. And this happens when Matt goes away for business and it's only for, you know, a day or two. You know, I bring Sadie into the bed with me. I might not necessarily cook a overly healthy meal that night. I feel like I would fall into my own way of doing things, and then, you know, then Matt would come back and say, well, what's going on here? So I wonder if that happens, you know.
You would pull out that, you know, bit of bacon from between your teeth and go, what do you mean? Nothing.
And I mean, that only happens because he's only gone for a short period of time. I think maybe if he was gone for longer periods of time, I'd pull my head in and, you know, I'd get back onto my routine. But there's something quite exciting when they go away that you kind of, to be a bit lazy. Or, I don't know, it's just,
yeah,
it's almost like Sadie and I get to have the girls' time. It's a bit of a slumber party. Daddy's not here. What can we get up to?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, there's that whole, you know, Greg's a real foodie and he has to eat. And, you know, like we'll have, when he's not here, we'll have potato and leek soup for dinner. Whereas I know with G, that would be, okay, and what's coming next? Do you know, what are we having after this?
Okay, so that's just my starter. Where's my main?
Yeah. And so there's a lot more just, you know, okay, we're having leftovers, we're having this. Whereas, for G, when he's here, because one of his great, you know, joys in life is you plan this 10-course meal and then you go out and spend $1,000 at the supermarket and then you cook for 15 people. And, you know, he just loves that.
Yeah,
he's a real entertainer and that's what he loves to do. Whereas for me, I would rather, okay, let's have scrambled eggs or let's have whatever and then we can do something different. You know, the idea of and I think when you've had small children and babies and whatever, that whole idea of preparation and washing dishes again and doing all that, you know, it kind of knocks the fun out of it a bit.
Absolutely. The thing that I've been thinking about lately is we never want to, I can't remember the term that it's where parents sleep with their children in the bed from the time they're born. Now, we would never set out to be those kind of parents, but it just happened that Sadie refuses to sleep in her own bed. She has always wanted to sleep with us and we're such walkovers that we've allowed it to happen. But in the last sort of 6 months, we've been really strict on, no, you've got to go to bed, this is your bed. But when she and I go back to Australia at the end of the month, can't sleep on my own because I really miss having a body there. So I'm going to want her to sleep in my bed and I'm going to ruin all of the hard work that we've done over the last 6 months.
Yeah, probably.
Because I will want her next to me and then we get home and the whole cycle will start again. Like, I sometimes think she's going to be sleeping in between until she's 16. I really do. But that thing when you're apart, sometimes your rules and your routine sort of tend to waver a little bit because there's not the other person there to pull you up on it.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. It's like bedtime with the kids. You know, our kids' bedtime's getting later and later and later until eventually I think I'll just wake up in the morning and find them still up.
Still awake.
I won't have to worry about putting them to bed because they'll still be up when I get up in the morning. But yeah, you do. You tend to slacken off and you're on holidays as well. Okay, so the last one we have to speak to, and I really wanted to talk to Sarah because I think this is something that we don't factor in when we're thinking about being apart from our partners and living apart, is Sarah is from the States and she and her husband are currently living in Sydney.
Right.
And his job involves an incredible amount of travel. Which has always been the case. They've always lived like that. Mm-hmm. Even when they were in the States, he travelled a lot. But she said the difference was in the States she had, like, really great friends who lived just down the road and it was all very easy for her. She said she really felt quite good about it, about the travel part of their relationship. But then they became expats. And
in a city that's not really
different.
Conducive to expat life.
No. And she said she just found it a lot harder. And she said some nights, you know, she'd just come home exhausted thinking, I just want to have a conversation with someone I already know where it doesn't start from scratch. And I think we can all identify with that, you know, just everyone you meet is new and you're just being new over and over and over again. But what I thought was an interesting aspect to Sarah's story is that she also then got sick. So we'll have a listen to Sarah and she can explain what happened. But I think this is just another thing we need to think about.
So I was had a really complicated health situation. It was kind of off the back of recurrent miscarriages. And I had a molar pregnancy, which the short version of it is that you get pregnant and instead of the hormones producing and growing a baby, it grows tumors in your uterus. And most of the time you just have a DMC and then your body just handles it and it passes just on its own. But in some cases, such as mine, it doesn't, and you have to actually have chemo to treat the tumors like you would cancer. So it's not technically cancer, but it is a tumor growth. So I didn't respond very well to the treatment. So I ended up having 15 rounds of chemo over 6 months and wasn't able to work for about 3 or 4 of those months, not, you know, at full steam the rest of the year. So this was in the middle of Matt had just started his degree at Harvard. And, like, it's no small task for him to get into that. And I just felt, and, you know, he finally came around to this as well, that I just didn't want him to miss that opportunity because I was sick. And we had already lost so much because of this disease, and I just didn't want to lose anything else, including the opportunity for him to get this amazing education. And so it took him away for about, the degree was partly remote and partly on campus in Boston. So he was in Boston for 3 weeks every couple months, basically. And I think once we decided that he was still going to move forward with it, despite everything that was going on, it was really important for us to be able to get through kind of the trauma of treatment and the uncertainty about my health, because it gave us something to focus on, something to look forward to. It gave me a sense of normalcy, like, you know, not everything was taken from us kind of a feeling. I wasn't able to work, so he needed to, frankly. And this was an important step in his career. So it was hard, though. Like, I think there was definitely guilt associated with it for him. You know, not from me, but just he wanted to be here, and it's hard to be away when, you know, your partner, the person you love, is unwell. So the way we handled it is we kind of said, look, you're still going to go, and you're going to do this, and we're not going to let this opportunity pass us by. But then we just flew out our family to hang out with me when he was gone. So, like, we basically just had family take turns. So my mom came out for a couple weeks, and my best friend came out, his sister came out. And there were times where it was just more than we thought we could handle. But you don't really have a choice to not handle it. So you just move forward and you move on and you do the best you can. And there were definitely moments. I mean, I remember one time kind of late into the treatment. And, you know, it's just so much pressure on the partner because he's having to do everything while I'm just unable to. All I was doing was sleeping and being sick. And, you know, he called his sister and was like, you have to come right now. Like, it doesn't matter what you have going on in your life. Like, I need help, you know? And we're really blessed with family who are people who would respond to that. And so, you know, like, literally 4 days later, his sister was in Australia. So, you know, that's part of that's him being called away for work and us accepting it. Part of it's about, you know, how you deal with being unwell when you're abroad, even more complex than just being sick normally. So yeah, it was a really, look, it was a shit year. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty terrible. But we got through it, and just like we get through everything else, you know, you take it a bit at a time, and we just asked for a lot of help, which as an expat, it was kind of the first time we had to do that with our friends here. And it was really encouraging to see that it wasn't just our friendships and our relationships here were not just social or superficial. It was like people really came through for us here, and it was wonderful, and it was really touching. And that was lovely. Because, you know, when you know how it is, like, when you meet people, like, you kind of don't know, like, how good of friends you are and until something you need them, which sounds kind of terrible. But to have people really come through for us, and some of them were really new friendships, to have people come through and really help out was awesome. So, you know, that was really affirming, to be honest.
Wow. Oh, my heart breaks for her.
I know. So Sarah finished her chemo in December and she's just had her 6-month checkup, and now it's just a matter of keeping our fingers and toes crossed that she can get pregnant.
Well, I hope she keeps us up to date, because that would be a very nice ending if she could have a little bubba.
I know. I told her that she had to keep us up to date. I was quite pushy. Yeah.
A few things. Oh, she's so selfless to say to her husband, we need some good in our lives while this is all going on, and, you know, to allow him to go to Boston and study. That's a really selfless thing to do, I think, because I don't know, for me, probably my initial reaction if I was sick like that, I'd just want Matt around me all the time. I wouldn't want him going anywhere.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want him by my side.
Exactly. I said exactly the same thing, Sarah. I said to her, oh, you are amazing, because to, you know, be by yourself and get through that. And she just kind of reiterated again. She said, I just didn't want this situation to ruin every good thing that we had going at the time. I just think she is incredible. Yeah, she's a really incredible story.
Absolutely. And I think also, living in Sydney as an expat, that city is not a place that I think is conducive to expat life. People are in their own groups. If you're from Sydney, I mean, I know myself, I'm a Sydney girl. There's no way I'd probably even think about letting other people into my group, and not that I just wouldn't think about it. Do you know what I mean? I just, I've got my friends, I've had my friends forever. I wouldn't be looking to make new friends. So I think for her to then, through all of this, find that she's got a great group of people that are there and supporting her, I think is amazing.
And so do I.
Know who your friends are. And obviously she mentioned new friendships. And they've just sort of come there and been there for her.
Yes. Yeah. I agree.
That's not what I would expect from a big city like Sydney, where people tend to have their own group, their own circle, and I think it would be very hard for an expat to break in. So, you know, I think that's wonderful that she's got a great group of friends that have been there for her.
No, she has. And the point she made too was that most of her friends in Sydney are her friends, because he travels all the time. So they're not friends that they've both made together. And she said that has been a really interesting one for them, because they're all people that she has chosen. And you know that when you're in a relationship, quite often your partner chooses friends that you wouldn't necessarily choose, you know, and you do things with them and you go, oh, well, I can kind of see why he really digs him, you know, not my great cup of tea, or maybe his wife isn't your cup of tea, but you become friends because your partner really likes them. But she said she never has to do that, because her husband's traveling all the time. It's her friends that she's chosen. They go out with the people that she's met. And that's another thing I hadn't thought about, that must happen all the time when it's you that's at home the majority of the time.
Yeah, and I also think that's very much an expat type of thing. I mean, I know here, because I haven't been working as much as Matt's been working, that probably all of our friends are the friends that I've made first.
Yeah.
So I made friends with the wives, and then I get to know them, and then you have a dinner, you have drinks, and then you meet their partner. And sometimes it's worked and sometimes it hasn't.
Yes.
You know, I could really love the wife, and then we meet the husband and we're like, oh, hang on. You know? Where that doesn't really happen back home. I came into our relationship with my set of friends. He came in with his set of friends, and we've actually been lucky that it's all mingled.
Worked out.
Yeah.
Now, Cez, I want to hear about your TV pick of the week.
Yes. Now, when this time last year, well, actually, it was probably August last year, I was flying back with Matt and Sadie from Sydney to Doha, and I never sleep on planes. Matt and Sadie, as soon as those engines start, they're out for the count. I don't hear from them, speak to them for the whole 13-hour flight. There's something about an engine on a plane for those two that knocks them out, whereas I refuse to sleep. I'm not a great flyer. I'm a little bit nervous. So I sort of keep my eye on everyone, make sure everything's, you know, above board. So I watch a lot of movies on the plane.
That's when you're not being the aeroplane police, of course.
That's right, yeah. I've got one eye on the screen, one eye on everyone else wandering up and down those aisles. But normally I watch movies, but this trip home last year, I actually watched a series called Broadchurch. So I watched season one. Have you seen it?
I love it. It was brilliant.
So it's set in, I think it's set in Dorset in the UK, so a tiny little seaside village, and a little boy has been murdered, and the whole series is a whole whodunit, and it brings up all of these secret lives of the people living in the village. And season two, I think, is already done and dusted in the UK, but I've been watching it on Apple TV, and I am hooked again. It is such a great show. So if you love that whole murder, it's very smart. You can't figure out, you know, normally sometimes with these shows or these movies, you kind of know who's done it before you get the end.
Yes.
For me, Broadchurch, I never had a clue. Like, it was every episode was type thing.
Yes.
It's just very smart. Yes. It's very clever. It's great filming. It's great scenery. I love it. One of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah, me too. And it was also one of the ones that Greg and I watched together and both loved together.
See, this is the thing. Matt was
even better.
Sleep on the plane. I watched the whole first season when we got off and we're standing in customs. Like, oh my God, I've just watched the best show ever. I'm telling him all about it. He's like, that sounds like something I'd really like. I'm like, Blake. And now, because it's Ramadan and I'm having a lazy month. July is my lazy month. I'm not doing a lot. I'm not blogging. I'm sort of doing some uni work. I'm having my lazy month. And so I've been watching season two and Matt comes home. He's like, that looks like a really good TV show. I'm like, it's the best show I've ever seen. You're too late. You slept on that flight. I'm not going back. You're going to have to watch it on your own in August when I'm home. But it is such a good show.
It is a goodie. It is a really goodie. I actually did that flying home this time with the last season of Downton Abbey. I watched the entire season on the plane. Yes, because I kind of hadn't. Yeah, I love it. Okay, so I have a podcast and I have a podcast that I'm talking to you on now.
But you're boom.
But I also, do you know Hank and John Green? They're both YouTubers. And John Green also is an author and he wrote The Fault in Our Stars.
Yes,
which has been made into a movie. And he did Searching for Alaska and Paper Towns. He and his brother Hank now have a podcast called Dear Hank and John.
It's
cute. Now, you know, with me, I always talk about podcasts that are good with the kids in the car, because there's plenty of podcasts I like that I can't always play in the car.
Yep.
It's that whole thing when you're listening to This American Life and then they suddenly give you the language warning and the whatever and it's like, oh, damn, that one sounded good. But Dear Hank and John is fantastic for kids in the car. The girls played it to me when we were driving back the other day and said, do you want to listen to this? And it was really good. So if you are on holidays and doing podcasts, listening to podcasts with your kids while you're traveling around, I would definitely recommend Dear Hank and John because it'll give them a giggle. And I think most kids now know who Hank and John Green are because they're, you know, all kids are big YouTube-y followers now. And, you know, a lot of young teens have read John Green's books and, I mean, The Fault in Our Stars
is
just such
a huge...
Yeah, I've
actually got A Fault in Our Stars on our bookshelf. I'm going to read that this summer.
Ah, fantastic. Yeah,
I haven't read it. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Sad, but gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? A big ball-your-eyes-out type thing.
Yeah, that's it.
Love it. For my lazy month of July.
Oh, I'm a bit jealous. I've just signed up because another podcast that's just come out is Darren Rouse from ProBlogger has just released his very first podcast. And part of what he is doing is it's all going to be blog tips. So if there's any bloggers out there, I'd definitely tell you now to go and subscribe to the ProBlogger podcast. One of the things he's going to do is the whole 31 Days to a Better Blog, which of course was the ebook that he released. And he's going to do it in a day-by-day series of the podcast.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and he just put a note out today saying, who wants to do that? And, of course, I said, me, because, you know, I've got so much spare time on my hands with, you know, four kids at home all day.
Well, as well as our podcast, we also have a blogging community here, and I know when I posted on my Facebook page that I was taking a break, in my head I was like, I'm committing the biggest blogging sin that I would never ever suggest anyone does. You don't go on your Facebook page and say, yeah, I'm not inspired anymore, I'm taking a month off, see ya. But I just have to do it. I want my lazy months. It's been a busy year. I'm breaking all this in. So I might not listen to Darren's podcast until I'm ready to get back in it again.
Yeah, do that.
And just to mention, we've actually got a couple of articles that we haven't spoken about this episode, just about couples surviving the distance apart. So I'll put all of those in the show notes. There's a really great piece from the New York Times. And also I thought that a discussion board about a couple that were getting ready to spend time apart, and people were giving her advice, and some people were saying, don't do it, it will ruin your marriage. The people were saying, no, it's great, you just have to communicate. So I'll put all the links to that in the show notes.
Well, it's amazing, that whole don't do it, it'll ruin your marriage, isn't it? I find that really interesting. And that, you know, when I wrote the blog this week about, you know, why I'm married to a wanker, a lot of people were, you know, one of the first commenters' responses was, oh, it's really lovely to see two people who are still sort of in love. And I think, you know, response number three was something like, absence makes the heart grow fonder of someone else.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, because so you only think about the good things?
Well,
about
they'll find someone else to grow fond of. Well, that's how I read it.
Oh, maybe I thought maybe you just remember. You know how I think my parents are the greatest things on earth, and then I get home and my dad will maybe make me cry one night at dinner, and then I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go back to Doha. But when I'm in Doha, I think he's an amazing man. But, you know, I just remember all of the great things. Maybe you mean that.
Yes, yeah. I don't know. But, but it goes back to that trust thing again, doesn't it? I guess some people just don't.
I mean, I really miss Matt when I'm away, and we have a great honeymoon period when I get back. Yes. It lasts about maybe half an hour, and then I'm back. Like, oh, God, you give me the shits. But no. But you do. You miss them. You think about how lucky you are. I know that's what I think when I'm away.
Yeah, me too, all the time. And because you suddenly do. You know, last night I had a whole house full of guests, and at sort of 10:30 at night I was trying to screw the shower head thing back on its thing because I'd had to pull it out and CLR it and scrub it. And that is, you know, I'll admit it, not something I would usually do. That's a job that I would usually handball straight to Greg's. But he's not here, so I've got to do all of that stuff. And
I can't even screw in a light bulb. I'm hopeless.
Yeah, see, but the thing is you have to when you're in these situations, because you suddenly go, I have to do this.
Otherwise, Sadie and I would be living by candlelight.
Eating chocolate in bed together.
It doesn't sound too bad, really, does it?
I know. Okay. All right. Well, Sez, it was so lovely to talk to you. Now, I have to do, because I saw my friend Chrissy yesterday, and I was saying how I had said in the podcast that, oh, I've got home and all my friends like you, which sounded really awful because it made it sound like they didn't like you before, but what a surprise, I've come home and they like you.
But they didn't know me before.
That's what I meant. What I meant was I've come home and all my friends know you. Like, I really have now got used to the fact that every person I see who is an odd, you know, good friend, their first question they ask me is, so how did you meet Sarah?
Maybe I need to do a tour of Adelaide.
I think so. But I think what it is is that people don't see any great evidence, I guess, apart from, you know, photos on Facebook or whatever. But my friends here don't see the evidence of my friendships elsewhere, so they probably kind of don't exist, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And yep. Whereas...
Because I'm just a figment of your imagination.
Whereas doing this podcast, I think people can hear me talking and laughing and whatever with you, and they can picture us together somewhere.
Yes, so, yep.
You know, people are now like, oh, so who is this Sarah and how did you meet her? And it's a whole different thing. But, yes, that's what I meant when I said, oh, I've come home.
No, I totally got you when you said that because they wouldn't have known me spoke before the podcast. So all of a sudden, new chick
that's
on
nice.
The scene.
But what Chrissy did notice is when I said, oh, yeah, my friend Chrissy said she thinks that she'd really like that you guys would be good friends, you were silent and you didn't say. So I think Chrissy and I would be good friends too.
Oh, sorry, Chrissy.
But that would be because you don't know
Chrissy. I'm coming to Adelaide,
Chrissy,
and we're going to go out for drinks. Chrissy, you and I are totes BFFs. Don't worry.
Oh, I feel awful now.
Oh, Chrissy, dear. I love you. I don't know you, but I love your girlfriend. We're going to be friends.
Okay, now we really have to go. I reckon we're past the hour mark. Okay, it was lovely talking to you, and we'll chat
you too
next week.
And we'll see everyone next week. Bye. Okay.